Welcome to the Indie Author Showcase. I am multi-award-winning author Chad Robert Morgan.
And I have a son who definitely wants to be you.
Yes, my internal ray of sunshine, Alex. Yep.
Glad to be here. Love it here.
Yes, it's the sincerity that is just making father
truly,
proud right now.
Truly, yes. Yes, all.
So why does Alex help me with the podcast? Because I make him.
Get me out of here. Get me out of here. What? Typo. Typo.
Typo. So today, let's start with talking about Pubby. Okay.
So what could a puppy be? Tell me what a puppy is. Inform me.
So puppy is a service. Yes. Thank you for setting me up.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Puppy is a service where, as an independent writer, you can put your book up for free for other people to read and review.
For free? That sounds great. I love free books.
Yeah, so unfortunately, it charges you something like $30 a month for you to do this. Yeah, okay. So I'm trying the 10-day trial. The idea is I wanted to try it out so I can report back to you and see how well it worked. So I'm only about maybe halfway through my 10-day trial. So in terms of whether or not the service is legit, it seems so far to be on the up and up. I've already gotten one review for my book. So what happens is I upload the book or make it available on Kindle Unlimited. There is a method where you pay them an additional $15 for your book, and then you can have people buy it on the Kindle for like $1 or whatever. So there is that approach as well that's available. But let's not overcomplicate it. Point is, you're putting your book up, somebody else reads it, and the currency on this is basically reviews. In other words, I'm burning so many credits to post my book up for review. In order to get more credits, I then have to review somebody else's book.
Now, small question, even though I already know the answer. How good are most of these books? Inform me.
Well, my books are up there, so obviously there's some good books up there. So new books are being uploaded like every day, right? So I have been struggling to find a quality book to read. Most of the books I've seen up there are either the kind where you got to pay $1, which I'm not willing to do.
We are not paying any money. Not that money.
Or a lot of them are like nonfiction self-help books, which are just really not of interest to me.
Love those.
The one book that I downloaded that I thought might be interesting was really bad.
Oh, how? How bad? Even though I already know the answer.
Well, I mean, it's like I was 10% through the book at my end of chapter 3, and it was reading like Serenity fan fiction.
Another quick thing. He sent me the PDF, right? And I'm flipping through it like a brief overview to see what I'm getting myself into. See the end? To be continued.
Well, that in itself isn't necessarily a bad thing. It depends on how the books are written. I mean, look at Lord of the Rings. That was basically one giant book cut up into three.
I also looked at the last couple pages. It ends up clipping off.
Of course it does.
Yeah.
What was really troubling for me going through that was something that I wanted to talk about called Show Don't Tell. Now, anybody who...
The thing that they teach in elementary school?
The thing that they teach in elementary school.
Whoa!
Yes.
Wow!
Well, because apparently somebody missed that class. So, since you have gone through elementary school...
Oh, what? No? I thought it...
Yeah, well, you might be going back there if you don't get your grades up, but
okay, that's another thing.
So you explain to me how Show Don't Tell works.
Show Don't Tell. Okay. How do I explain it? I know how to do it.
Well, then do it. Do an example.
I'm not gonna give an example. You would expect for me. But it's like, instead of saying that, like, oh, Jessica feels sad, you show that Jessica feels sad by being like, then whole body slumped over as she walked, swinging along from side to side like a dead zombie on a farm that just got rejected.
That's actually not a bad example.
You're welcome.
Yes, there you go. And, you know, bravos for his improv skills, because he just bring that right off the cuff there. You know,
yeah. Little does he know, that's actually a part of the book I've been writing for 7 years.
Right. Started when you were 5, did you? Is that what you...
7 years, I'm 16.
Uh-huh.
Did you...
I'm not doing math right now. It's like 9 o'clock at night. I'm not doing math.
Okay. All right, fair enough.
I'm a writer, not a mathematician. What the hell?
It's 4th grade math. 16 minus 9, dude.
7.
Yeah.
Okay, so you started it when you were 7. Thank you. So I was only off by 2 years.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, because I wasn't doing math. I was just, never mind. Anyway.
16 minus 7.
Yes, Alex. I was not doing math.
16 minus 7.
You still weren't writing no damn book at 7, so the book is still valid.
16 minus 7.
Is 9.
Yeah.
Again, it's 9 o'clock at night. Okay, so we're going to edit this shit out.
No, we're keeping this in.
I am editing this shit out.
No!
Oh, God. Yes, okay, so...
Stop editing yourself.
Apparently, I can't do math. Okay, that's fine. God, that's almost the jacuzzi slab all over again.
Yeah. I love the jacuzzi slab.
Yeah, we had to put a cement slab, and like an idiot, I miscalculated how much cement we needed because I calculated the height or the length and the width of the thing and forgot height because we were building something in 3 dimensions, not 2.
So when we ended up with a lot less concrete than we thought, you know, when we needed a lot more, we were kind of surprised.
Oh my God, yeah, I know. I kept going back and forth.
The next time we were going to invest in a concrete mixer.
Oh, you know, it worked. Hot tubs on the slab. And didn't fall off, so I couldn't have done something that horribly wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah, not yet, no. Well, when it falls off, we'll be old and dead, and I don't have to worry about it. Anyway, so getting back to show, don't tell. Why this is a thing was, this was what was making this indie book so difficult to read. And I don't want to out anybody, so I'm not going to talk about... you know, the name of the book or who it was or anything like that. Because, again, that's not the point of the podcast. The point is to lift up indie authors, not...
Yeah, we're not going to point people like, shame! Shame on you! Like, we're not going to do that.
But that is something that really is kind of almost, like, expected. Like, if you don't have that in your books right now, I don't know what to tell you, man. Because it's kind of fundamental.
It's kind of elementary.
But the thing of it is that when I went to college, there was an English writing class that was required, right? Because everybody has to be able to, you know, form a coherent thought when they leave college, you know. So it was, I don't go figure. And so this whole idea of, creating imagery through words was, you know, there are people in college that were still struggling with the idea. So as simple as it sounds and as early as we bring it up, people do still struggle with this concept. But yeah, it is as simple as, don't tell me that the guy was tall. Tell me that the guy had to duck through the doorway.
Well, tell me that, I don't know. People can look over him because all he could see was his lower back.
So yeah, nothing's going to drive your story down more than a bunch of characters with little to no description about them. Even if they're minor characters that are going to come and go, you still have to paint the world that you're living in. Especially since, like, this one was a sci-fi novel, right?
Did you just burp? No, it's a little guy.
So, this guy was creating a sci-fi world, right? And he was talking about this kind of very fascist police state, and all these cops are bringing this guy in. And this guy was apparently not from that world.
Right, right.
You know, like, I got that gist.
He's a little unique.
Yeah, but point is that you need to describe all that. Like, the fact that he was not from that world...
It's kind of like a big thing, right?
Well, I would have thought that would have been very visually obvious. You know? Like, it mentions the fact, like, they're having difficulty understanding his words, and he wasn't registered in their computer system because he wasn't from that world. So, I mean, that part's fine, but there's still... Like, when the cops came out of the car, I had no idea what they looked like. I had no idea what kind of car they were exiting. I mean, this is a sci-fi world.
I'm imagining that they were just, like, regular, like, everyday cops with, like, no face.
I was thinking, like big old, like, stormtrooper helmets kind of thing and everything, and big old riot gear on them. But that's the point, is that it was so vague. And that could have told me so much about this world by the way the cops are dressed, right? Like, if the cops show up and they're in bike shorts and wearing a polo shirt and we're like, you know, in like sunglasses, then obviously this is not a very crime-ridden world, right? You know? But like, oh, dude, man, like, you're so totally harsh and a buzz. But it also tells you a little bit about the environment, right? Because, I mean, like...
It's not hot. It's not cold. It's very probably, like, warm.
Right.
Because they're in, like, bike shorts and, like, polo.
So, I mean, the scene described it as being dark and...
violent and moody.
Well, not even violent. It was actually empty. Of people, because apparently it was past curfew. But I mean, again, it's all this stuff is being told to me very, very dryly. Like, it could have been a more interesting if the guy was stumbling and he bumped into somebody who was in a hurry, and the guy looks almost like, "Hurry, man, you got it! It's almost curfew," and he runs off. And then the cops come in, and you describe the cops.
That's being heavily involved.
Exactly, right? I mean, it's just, like I said, it came off as very, very dry. The whole chapter was about maybe 3 pages long.
Wow.
I mean, and it's just, there's just no description to visualize anything. So, I mean, I guess I'm kind of beating the topic to death here, but, you know, when you're watching a movie, right, you have sight, you have sound to create your story. And you have dialogue, right? When you're on a book, all you have are words. So, you know, there's no pictures on the page, right? I mean, unless you're writing a graphic novel.
A pop-up book.
Yeah. Pulled a little page that watched the cop beat the hell out of the wizard, you know, that kind of... So you don't want to describe every minute detail, because that's sort of like getting into more of a Dickens kind of era kind of thing, where everything was described to the micro detail. And that gets boring too, right?
Yeah, you can't describe every single thing. You can't take 10 pages on every single thing in the book.
Right. My grandmother actually used to tell me about a book. I don't know what book it was, and I don't know who wrote it. But she was telling me that it was actually made a satire out of that.
Really? Yeah, I know. A little bit of context here, fellas. We have a little small canine, a dubious little guy. He's going ham on a bone under the table. He He is just consuming. It is kind of impressive. I wish I could.
The not so little little guy.
That's a little little guy.
The official Spectral Ink puppy.
Yeah, he's all emotional.
The official podcast, the official puppy of the Indie Author Podcast.
Yeah.
Anyway, my grandmother was telling me about this book where they would write just pages and pages of this elaborate detail. Like they would go to this dinner, right? And it would spend pages and pages talking about how, you know, the succulent turkey that was, dripping with glaze and everything like that. And the mashed potatoes with the, you know, the steam rising and the butter melting and the crystal clear goblets where the wine would be poured in, and every single piece was written out in exquisite detail. And then they go, you know, I'm not hungry. Let's go eat out or something like that. And they would just leave and leave the whole thing behind.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know what you just remind me of?
What?
In class, we read a little book called The Alchemist. I bet you probably hold this
book. No, I don't know this one.
Really? Okay, hold on. Let me look something up. Let me fact check myself before I embarrass myself. But according to the book, this is one of, if not the most translated book of all time. What is the most translated book of the world?
I thought that would have been the Bible.
Except for the Bible.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think Bible always wins.
But The Alchemist, it's a book we were reading for, what is it? We're reading this for English, right? And I did not like this book. It's a short little thing. It's about a 3.9 on most book things.
Okay, which...
But it's supposed to be like a fable, right? Mm-hmm. Only problem is, you are not showing a single thing. Like I said, it's supposed to be a fable, it's supposed to be deep. But at the same time, when the main character, when there's like, there's one named, two, three named characters. There's three. Wanna know what one of the Englishmen is called? One of the characters called? The Englishman. No physical description, ever. You never get a single descriptor. The crystal vulture, a single physical descriptor.
You know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of when I was studying art history, and they were talking about the early days in the Renaissance when the first painting that had perspective was made.
Right.
And people's minds went, you know. And then ever since then, it's like, why would you do it any other way? Right? So, you know, at one point, like, you go back to, like, really, really old pieces of literature.
Oh, this isn't really, really old.
Point is, really old piece of literature can be very, very dry. Because at some point, somebody invented the idea of... the whole idea of show, don't tell had to get invented at some point. In fact, I think it's a fairly recent invention, if I'm not mistaken. I think it was only within the past 100 years or so that concept came into being, if I remember. I think I remember reading about that somewhere. But it's sort of like the invention of painting with perspective. It's sort of how do you go back to any other form at that point? Because it's so now fundamental. We're going to have to cut every single one of these fucking bone drops.
I know. He's going ham, isn't he?
Ham on the ham bone.
Is that ham bone?
All right. Well, so that's talking a little bit about show, don't tell, which, again, as you mentioned, is kind of an elementary thing. Like, it shouldn't need to be discussed. But, I mean, there's a couple of these things that still come up in discussion, like, using the word said.
Yeah. Oh, boy. This guy. Look at him. Think he can drink water while we record a podcast? How dare he? It almost like he's a dog and doesn't know any better.
So one of the things that still comes up whenever we have these kind of discussions with other writers that are struggling and trying to make a name for themselves is this idea of said, right? Have you ever opened the book and like every single narration tag has a different thing? Let's go over there, Joe exclaimed. I don't think we should do that, Mabel contradicted, you know.
Yes, you said every once in a while. It's invisible on the page, as they say.
Yes. So here's my caveat to that, though, as I found the hard way.
Oh, are we talking about that book?
That book?
That book.
That book?
That book.
That book.
It's a good book.
Did you read that book?
Yes, I did. I listened to that book. Okay.
It is a good book.
It is a good book. Only problem is they never use a single word to describe someone speaking other than said.
So, this was John Scalzi's Red Shirts.
Yes.
Excellent book.
Wonderful.
But there is one part in the book, and it's only one part, that it really was a problem. But there's this giant conversation with about five people?
Yes.
And nothing breaking up the conversation. And so, just the constant repetition. Now, like Alex says, on the page, it's invisible, but you still hear it in the audiobook.
Said.
And by the dozens time, it was starting to get a little irritating. So, yes, we get the idea. So, my rule of thumb, personally, I use said probably 50% of the time.
75.
Well, I use it 50%. 25%, I am usually using asked.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Because if somebody is asking a question, I can use asked. The other 25% of the time, I'm usually breaking it up with action. Because keep in mind, when you're having a conversation, you don't have to have a dialogue tag in every single one.
And he punched Joe in the face. And then he said, I hate you. And John punched back. And then John said, well, I hate you too. You know, you can.
Well, what I generally do is after about maybe three times in a row of using said, I try to find some other way to break up the tag. I might skip a tag. I don't like skipping tags because of the audiobook, right? On the page, it makes sense, but in the audiobook, unless you have very distinct voices in your characters, it can throw a listener, right?
We don't want to do that.
Yeah. Well, like if I'm having a conversation with Intergalactic Space Force between Guppy and Q-Tip, I can skip the tags, right? Because Guppy and Q-Tip have a very distinct tone, right? Q-Tip basically talks like me because I don't change my voice when I do Q-Tip, right? But when I'm doing Guppy, I channel my inner Keanu. I'm like, dude, like, I'm not sure.
I'm not sure if I like
if I wanted
like if I'm gonna go to this mate, like, do a space coke.
But the point is between the two of them, I could drop a descriptor. I can drop a dialogue tag, and the reader, the listener, is not going to get confused.
Guppy is about to do the space coke.
Why doesn't he do space coke?
I don't know.
Guppy doesn't do space coke. He's already fucking brain dead.
I mean, he does talk with space stuff.
So. Yeah, but I mean, like, he's just born that way. Right?
He's born perpetually high.
You know, he's like, oh man, like, I saw him on the Jumbotron. And, like, his penis was, like, huge. It took up the entire screen.
His mother ate edibles when he was...
While he was in the womb.
While he was in the womb, and it went down. He ate them while he was a penis.
So, if you have a good narrator, if you know what the narrator is doing with your characters, you can drop a dialogue tag. I do my own narration, so I kind of already know when I can get away with it. But what I generally do is if I'm having a conversation between two people. When I drop the dialogue tag, I break it up with some action, right? So, you know, we need to go over there, Joe said. I think that's a bad move, Frank said. Joe shook his head. I'm not kidding. This is the way we need to do, right? So the fact that Joe shook his head, it tells you a little bit about his state of mind, you know, because he's, of course, this is an argument. He's getting a little frustrated. God damn it, I told her, you know.
And for today's book review, Unceremonious Cut, because we had a couple of technical issues yesterday, but none of that should be worried about, right?
Yeah, hopefully you will edit it to the point where nobody will know that there's a technical issue, and you can actually cut out the part where you were saying that there are technical issues.
No. We'll be reviewing Brute Force by Scott Mayo.
Not to be confused with Scott Myers.
Yeah, kind of a...
Well, in doing some research for the podcast, I looked up Scott Myers, and Scott Myers, with an S, does write and publish books all about computer programming. So if you're looking for a good indie publisher that does some hilarious sci-fi stuff, you want Scott Myer. If you're looking at setting up a Linux operating system, you want Scott Myers.
Oh, okay. Well, that's a nice thing to know. I'll keep that in mind next time I want to set something up in Linux. Anyway, a summary of the book, Brute Force. This will be a little bit of a long one.
Well, let's set up the review. So, Scott Myer is actually the first indie writer that we have not actually met in person.
Yep.
So most of the people that we've done so far, we've met at other conventions such as WonderCon, Monsterpalooza, Comic-Con, things of that nature. We're independent authors are going out there and basically trying to push their books into the public, get their names known and everything. Scott Myer, I actually found, came up in my Audible search when I was first joining Audible and listening to Magic 2.0. The Magic 2.0 is a great series. I think he's finished it.
Yeah.
Because he hasn't published a new book of that for a while. Magic 2.0 was really cool. It was about basically a group of people that have discovered how to hack the universe. Basically, this is all a computer program, and they figured out the source code. And since they could change the code of the universe, they basically had godlike powers.
And so, they all decided to go back to the medieval ages.
Well, it turned out that was part of the thing that they had actually set up. They planted the idea.
Nope, spoilers. Stop.
Well, this is just in the first book. This is like in the first couple chapters in the first book, so it's not a big spoiler, but it turned out that wasn't a coincidence. They actually laid it out, so if somebody else discovered the source code, they would also discover that hiding out in dear old medieval England was a good fallback plan for when they inevitably abused their power enough that they got the authorities involved. So there's a whole collection of these guys that meet in medieval England, and they're all computer nerds from throughout time. So great series. There's a couple books he did I wasn't a huge fan of. There was Grand Theft Astro, which was okay. It was an okay book, but it didn't really hook me. And Run Program, which I really didn't get into too much.
Rebecca Scott.
We're still talking about Scott Myer. We're talking about his other books.
Okay.
Yeah. But Magic 2.0, I was a big fan of. What's this cop one? Is that the Regulators?
I think it is.
There's been two books in that series. That one's really funny. I like that one. The last one of his that we read, and that's the one we're going to review, is Brute Force. That one had us
dying.
That was hilarious.
This was great. Want me to read the book synopsis now?
If you want to look into the camera while you do it, sure. Because everybody's looking at your mop of hair. It's a mop. I clean the floor with that. You can stick your head in the water. I'm a former squid. I know how to mop a floor.
A peaceful. We have this on Audible, so I need to pull out my phone. This one, I don't get the. A peaceful organization of civilized planets is faced with a threat to their very existence. Desperate to put it on me.
Okay, well, you get in the camera then. You're barely in frame. Okay, go ahead and start over. Hold on. Dramatically hold up your phone.
Dramatically hold up my phone.
Okay.
Okay. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
A peaceful organization of civilized planets is forced with a threat to their very existence. Desperate to save themselves, they turn for help to the most brutal, backwards, violent species in the known galaxy, humans. Growing up in the aftermath of an apocalyptic event known as the Bad Week, hasn't been easy for Cross Agarwal. Decades ago, in a world before the Bad Week, he would have been graduating from college, starting a career, and living on his own. But in a post-apocalyptic time where mankind is in ruins and on the verge of self-destruction, Cross works in his father's subterranean cobra farm, tries to avoid getting involved in the turf war between his town and the southern basin, wondering if his future will ever be anything but bleak. When a group of aliens appears by surprise and invites a select group of humans to join them, it could be Cross's chance to not only find his own place in the universe, but to also help prove that humanity is good for more than just violence.
So when I first was listening to this, so the cover's got like an astronaut with a sword trailing blood, right? So it's...
Can I look?
Well, I was going to bring a picture of it, and because I do that when I edit it, after you edit it. I put a little graphic up there so that...
I do the rough stuff.
Yeah.
Don't quote me.
Well, you could put the graphic up there too. You know, you're supposed to be the editor of this damn thing, you know. Uh-huh.
Oops.
So, anywho, so when I'm first reading it, the cover has an astronaut with a sword with blood, and I start reading this like Mad Max type world, post-apocalyptic world, and I'm like, okay, how do we get from here to there? And so there's a whole big, you know, car battles and storms and all this other kind of stuff and the fighting with the cobras and everything. The cobras was a big part of the first part of the book. Actually was.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, this is like a totally different book. And then the aliens show up. It almost reminds me of Life of Brian. Did you ever watch Life of Brian?
Yes.
Where the guy's being chased by the Romans, he jumps out and he falls, and then that flying saucer that comes out of nowhere. And they zip around, and he's like, what the hell are these guys? And the aliens are like, what the hell is this guy? And they dump him out, and then they fly up, and you never see him again. It had that kind of vibe where the aliens just show up seemingly out of nowhere. And the aliens have a problem. So they're these three different races. They are what I think they were, the navigators, the builders, and the pile.
Yeah.
The navigators were the ones that basically navigated the ships through interstellar space. The builders could build pretty much anything that you wanted. And the pile was literally a pile of rocks. But because they were all like quantum entangled, that was their communication system, right? They were, and I think they were telepathic. Like in each one of their suits, they would have one piece of the pile with them. And that's how they all communicated. Yeah. So, and they have an enemy, and they go to the humans. It's like, we need your help dealing
with... We need you to kill our enemies, our foes.
So, you know, they get all ready for battle and everything like that, and they start seeing the enemy. And the main character is like, so you guys are the navigators because you navigate through the star. Yes, that is correct. And you call them the builders because they built everything, right? Yes, and the pile is... Okay, because they're a pile. So you guys name things really literally, right? Yes. So what do you call them? The killers. And it's like, okay, what do you call us? Worse killers. And they're like, because we kill more than them, or we're worse at killing than them? The other part that was just so hilarious. So they have this culture where it's all based on the aliens.
Autumn, effects. Right. Yeah.
And then they have to go up and they challenge them to one-on-one combat, and then the humans gang dogpile on them and totally kill them. And the other, they fight without honor, and this one bad guy is like, maybe we should fight without honor because they're kicking our ass, and it's smack, right? And he's like, at one point, this is like the third time the humans are kicking their ass. And so he's like, you know what, screw this, I'm out of here. And he just starts booking it, right? And he started running. And all the bad guys are basically in a line waiting for their turn to get slaughtered, right? And he's just running by them, getting out of there, out of town. And they're like, you're going to die a coward. Yeah, probably. You have no shame. Nope, not a lick. And we were just rolling. So this was alert. Now, I will say that as well written as the book is, I don't think it would have hit nearly as well if it wasn't for the 1-2 punch of Scott Meyer's writing
and the beautiful narration
by Luke Daniels.
Yes.
Luke Daniels narrates most of Scott Meyer's books. Meyer is plural of Myers. Okay.
Yeah, John Daniels is great.
Luke Daniels.
Sorry, John Daniels sounds like it rolls off the tongue. Luke Daniels is great. Yeah. Luke Daniels is honestly like one of the best audiobook speakers I've like seen. He's amazing.
Well, but it's also that pairing, right? The only other pairing. Yeah, this is a notification. Say, no, thank you. I don't care about the weather update. The only other pairing that is as good as Scott Meyer and Luke Daniels is Barry J. Hutchinson and Phil Thrawn. Because that 1-2 punch of Hutchinson and Thrawn doing the Space Team books, I mean, that was just the same kind of synergy, right? Where it's just it felt like they were meant to work together, right? I mean, it was so excellent. So in fact, I think a couple of Scott Meyer's books, a couple of the books by Scott Meyer, since I'm tripping on the plurality here.
You got this, I believe in you.
My son has faith in me.
Oh, this might be new for him. What? Nah, type of.
It kind of is.
Speak up.
A couple of the books he wrote was not narrated by Luke Daniels. All of Magic 2.0 is. All of. Is it The Irregulators or The Authority? I forget what the cop series is.
Want me to look it up?
Yeah, let's look it up. And Brute Forces. But I don't think Luke Daniels did Run Program or Grand Theft Astro. So which might be why those two books didn't resonate with me as much as the others. But they just make such an awesome pairing between the two of them. That it, as an audiobook listener, that was a fantastic experience to listen to them. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I'm still... The destructive reasoning? The authorities. It's the authorities. The authorities. It's the authorities.
Okay. Yeah, so right now they're looking at all your hair because you've got your head bit down.
Well, I was
so in our next poll, should Alex get a haircut?
No, please. No.
You're going into the red, you know. So I think it's fair to say we both enjoyed Brute Force.
Yeah.
Right? Scott Meyer is one of the authors where if I'm looking for a new book, I check to see if he's got a new one out. Because that is an indie author I really, truly enjoy. Anything else you want to say about it before we close up shop on this?
Nah.
So next week, we're going to try something different. We're going to have our first indie author interview.
Yeah.
Our friend Todd, author of Wild Mane and Godspell.
Yep. Great fantasy book.
Godspell, not Godspell, yep. I believe, right?
If you like having a long, hefty book with wizards and dragons and all that good jazz.
Well, those aren't the only books he's written, but I do know he does have the Godspell or the Wild Mane series that was really, I wish I had the money at the time because I really wanted to buy them, because not only to add to my collection of autographed copies of books from indie authors, but also because he actually has the covers as one long panoramic, which was a really cool thing. I really dug that. So we're going to, if all goes according to plan, which would be a nice change of pace.
Wonderful.
We will be interviewing him next week on the podcast.
Yep.
So all three of our listeners can get to know him.
Yep.
We really need a sign off for this.
Yeah, we should. Really.
Indie Author Showcase.
Indie Author Showcase.
Indie Author Showcase. So let's wrap up real quick with our convention schedule.
Again?
To remind it. Hey, we never know when we're going to get a new listener, so we got to go every time.
As long as you wrap up quick, because so far this is going to be an hour worth of editing for me. So, speed run.
Okay, so we got Monsterpalooza at the end of May. September, we have back-to-back. We have HorrorCon on the 13th and 14th, followed the weekend after that by Creep IE. Then in October, I forget what we're in October, but we have Son of Monsterpalooza. All these are here in California. We got Monsterpalooza in Pasadena. We got HorrorCon in LA, Creep IE in Ontario, and Son of Monsterpalooza, I believe, is in Burbank. Is that fast enough for you?
Yes, okay. And with that, for the sake of my editing time, toodaloo. Say it, toodaloo.
Please tell me we're not signing off toodaloo.
Sign off toodaloo.
You've got to be kidding me. No. We gotta find a better catchphrase. Like, we gotta find.